We learn the Abbey Theatre in Dublin was founded in 1904 as a national theatre for Ireland by William Butler Yeats and Lady Gregory. In a letter to Sean O'Casey dated April 20th, 1928, Yeats acknowledged his theatre's debt to O'Casey's plays. "I bore in mind that the Abbey owed its recent prosperity to you. If you had not brought us your plays just at that moment, I doubt if it would now exist." The poet was here thinking of the theatre's virtual bankruptcy in 1923, forced to close for many months during the Anglo-Irish guerrilla war, when the evening curfew kept people indoors and harassed by the general fear of bomb-throwing raids on public places in the subsequent civil war. The theater had still not retrieved its fortunes by 1923, when The Shadow of a Gunman by Sean O'Casey became its first great box office attraction for many years. Joseph Holloway created a history informally by keeping a diary of his visits to the Abbey Theatre. On May 10th, for example, in 1924, he wrote of the play's revival at the Abbey. It was first staged there on March 3rd of that year. "The little theatre was thronged again, and crowds being turned away as I went up at 7:45, the matinee was equal to last Saturday's in attendance. Juno, as well, has broken all records." Another entry for August 14, 1924 reads, "I witnessed a strange incident last night in seeing William Butler Yeats and Mrs. Yeats being crowded out of the Abbey Theatre and having to seek the pictures to allay their disappointment. O'Casey's play, The Shadow of a Gunman, had been staged for 3 nights with the usual result that crowds had to be turned away each performance. This and his other play, Juno and the Paycock, have wonderful drawing power. The same people want to see them over and over again. And the author stood chatting to me in the vestibule the other night as the audience came thronging in, proud of the fact, but no way swell-headed, his cloth cap cocked over his left eye, as his right looked short-sightedly at the audience's eager rush into the theater. Certainly he has written the 2 most popular plays ever seen at the Abbey, and they both are backgrounded by the terrible times we've just passed through. But his characters are so true to life and humorous that all swallow the bitter pill of the fact that underlies both plays. The acting in both reaches the highest watermark of Abbey acting." That from Ronald Ayling in his article, History and Artistry in Sean O'Casey's Dublin Trilogy. We'll have a rare chance to view one of the plays by Sean O'Casey, credited with keeping the Abbey Theatre going in the 20s because of the size of the audiences it drew, and that is The Shadow of a Gunman, to be presented this weekend by the Scranton Shakespeare Festival, directed by Brian McGurl, theatre educator and venue liaison with the festival, and Joe McGurl, actor and director, who has the role of Donald in the production. They stopped in at the WVIA Benko studio to talk about Scranton Shakes and Sean O'Casey. Brian McGurl.
When Scranton Shakes was given the space in the marketplace at Steamtown, they finally had a home, a place to call home. So looking at that space, you know, I immediately was said, boy, I would love to, I've always wanted to do Shadow of a Gunman by Sean O'Casey, and I thought this space would be perfect for it. So I was, I guess, you know, maybe the impetus for that, thinking, you know, this is the type of thing maybe you could do in here. But they wanted to expand the season. They'd always had a summer season, and they wanted to work at expanding a little bit. So they started doing a panto in December 2 years ago, and Joe has directed that. And they, this year, wanted to expand a little bit more, so they put Shadow of the Gunman on the docket, as well as Spring Awakening, a musical that was done back in January.
When you think about the time of year, this happens to be March. We're on the brink of St. Patrick's Day. We know there are ties in the city of Scranton, so many ties to Ireland and back. Is there some sense that this is a pre-St. Patrick's Day offering?
Well, in our house, we call it St. Patrick's Month, and there are quite a few Irish homes around here that do the same. So for sure it is, and I always wanted to do this as an offering part of that. St. Patrick's Day is a special time for all of northeastern Pennsylvania, the St. Patrick's Month, let me say. I mean, there's parades in Pittston, there's parades in Jim Thorpe, there's parade, you know, like all over the place. Wilkes-Barre has their own in Scranton as well, so it takes place throughout that entire time. So besides parading, though, I thought the Irish contribution to world drama has been significant. George Bernard Shaw, Sean O'Casey, Ed O'Brien, I mean, so many others, Samuel Beckett. So all Irish playwrights. And I thought this would be a great way to inject some of the Irish culture into the celebration of St. Patrick in March. So that was where the impetus came from for me. It's always been a special time for me. I went to the first parade. My father took me to the first one back in 1962. And I said, why are we having this parade? And he said, it's for you because you're Irish. So I've always had a rather kind of a possessive feeling about the parade since then. And I'm happy to be able to do this for parade season, the parade time.
Joe, what about your connection to Scranton Shakes? What keeps you there? What drew you there in the first place?
Yeah, so this will be going into the summer, the 14th season for the Shakespeare Festival. I've been doing it for 13 years. I was originally supposed to be in the original season, but I got very sick, so I wasn't able to do it. But I got started with it because Michael Flynn, who's our executive producer, he and I went to school together at the University of Scranton. And when we were still in our very nascent stages up at Naog Park with a dream, a hope, and a wish, and 10 cents doing our Shakespeare up there, he thought it would be a good opportunity for me to get involved because I had never done Shakespeare prior to that my first season doing it, and I really, really just fell in love with it. And, you know, I think it's kind of sad because I didn't even really know too much about Shakespeare beforehand. You know, we read Romeo and Juliet in high school, but that was just about my exposure to it. And now I feel so grateful that I have been doing this for 13 years. I have gotten so deeply involved with it. And now there is something that younger artists or actors who are interested in it can come and see Shakespeare done by professional actors with professional lighting designers, professional crew. If you're interested in that way, we can get them involved with that. And now we have this wonderful youth ensemble who are starting to do Shakespeare as well. So it's like we're really building foundations here in northeastern Pennsylvania, getting arts and education back into the area. It's such a pleasure for me now to, in a way, give back to a community that has given me so much.
They started a youth orchestra program last year, and they played for Gypsy last summer, and they were the orchestra for Gypsy. It was fantastic. So I think that's one of the only places that does that.
On to Sean O'Casey and the play itself.
Again, going back to my dad, he was the drama director at the University of Scranton during the 1960s, and O'Casey died in 1964, and he did Juno and the Paycock the next year, which was another one of O'Casey's plays, and followed that up with The Shadow of a Gunman. So an early theater memory for me, and I loved the play when I saw it the first time. I remember the cast who was in it. I could tell you know, Roz Peck and Ruth Judd, who were some of the people who were in the show from years back. And so I always wanted to do this show. And then looking at that Shake Space, as we said, looking at that opportunity, I thought this would be a great thing to do. The play itself is a Shadow of a Gunman. It's set in 1920, right in the midst of the Irish War for Independence. And It gives a little bit of history about Ireland and things that were going on in Ireland that maybe people weren't aware of, and, you know, things that I think are worthwhile people knowing about.
What strikes you about it, Joe? Did you know it going in?
I've not read it before at all until my dad told me about it, that he was doing it and wanted me to be involved, and I gave the script a read. And when I first read it, I was definitely interested in it. But what struck me is when we started to do it, it became a lot funnier once we had everybody together hearing it. In a way, it's very similar to Shakespeare. I think it sounds better than it reads sometimes. You really need to hear it to understand that humor. And it's very Irish in that sentiment of there's a lot of kind of dark black humor. And towards the end, it does get very serious, as the Irish tend to do. But I've had a blast being involved with it. And I think, you know, there are a lot of themes and sentiments that were going on in 1916 that I think would be incredibly relevant politically today. You know, we don't have armed paramilitary groups that are raiding people's houses in America right now. But there are certainly a lot of, I think, regardless of anybody's political affiliation, there's been a lot of strife and conflict in the world that I think anybody can put themselves in their shoes today and still kind of feel those same emotions.
Joe described it very well about the humor and hearing the humor, but their seriousness. How does the director make sure that the balance isn't tipped too far?
Yeah, it is a balancing act. The play is hilarious. It's funny, like the Irish are funny. The language is funny. The way that they speak is funny. The way the Irish use the English language is funny. And there's all of that in it. Plus, you have the characters who are funny characters doing funny things. So it's a funny play. But then, as Joe said, it gets serious. There's political violence going on in Dublin at the time, and a lot of people got hurt. So it becomes very serious. The pace of the play, the feel for the play, there are high moments, and then it comes down, lulls and things like that. So pacing is important, but the other thing is the actors who were involved, and I struck gold when I cast this play. I kind of, you know, any director always says, I wonder if this person would do it, I wonder if this person would do it. Every person I asked said yes, and I have what I would call a dream cast. They're fantastic, fantastic actors.
You are a musician yourself, you told us.
Correct.
Brian. What about incidental music? Does O'Casey call for sessions?
There's not. Okay, he was, and this is where, as a director, I kind of went outside the bounds of the play. O'Casey was a tragic comedy, and he was a realist for, you know, especially in his earlier plays. But I found a way to get some music in. I have one of the characters who comes back, and she's going to sing an Irish song called Shula Roon, which is a beautiful song. It's an old Irish song from actually about the 1600s, about somebody pining for their, worried about their lover who has gone off to fight in other wars and things like that. So it's a lovely song, and one of our actors, Maddie Casey, is going to sing it at the very end of the show.
Joe, can you tell us who is in this dream cast?
Sure, yeah. And I think another great part is it's all local actors, you know, people who are born and bred in northeastern Pennsylvania who have also gone on to do professional stuff, you know, whether it be on Broadway, off Broadway, lots of great local talent. We've got Connor McGuigan, who is a Scranton all-star. We have Mara Malloy, who's a fantastic actress. My mentor taught me everything I know, so it's been a real treat for me to work with her again. Kelly Jean Graham, who's been very much involved with the Scranton Shakespeare Festival as our choreographer for a number of musicals. Michael Bradshaw Flynn, our executive producer, is also in the show. Colin Holmes plays the other opposite lead to me in the show. He's the drama director at Scranton Prep. Has been involved with Shakespeare Festival for many years as well. And Maddie Casey, as my dad said, who is a young and rising star. She's absolutely incredible. Yeah, the cast, they're wonderful, as well as your friend.
An old friend of mine, Joe Mullen, and a friend of Bob Beswar, our language designer, and myself from our years as university players back in the 70s. So I was talking to Joe, and Joe said, Joe, would you be interested in doing this role? So Joe's involved as well. So the old folks are having a good time as well.
Well, introduce us to your lighting designer.
Bob Beswar is our lighting designer. Bob and I, our fathers both taught at the University of Scranton. His dad was the basketball coach, of course, Coach Beswar, who coached the Royals to great success, AAA championship, national champions. So Bob and I have known each other our entire lives, both grew up in Dunmore, and then we met again at the university, and you know, we ended up being roommates for a couple of years while in school. So there was a big group of us who were in the University of Scranton players who stayed friends for all the years since we were there, and we still get together every once in a while and, you know, talk on have Zoom meetings or whatever it is, and still get together and have calls. So Bob was in last summer. He's the lighting designer for General Hospital. He had worked in New York for many years at One Life to Live, but then ABC shut that show down, and he moved out to the West Coast. So he lives out there, but still lives in New York as well, but works out in L.A. on General Hospital. So he was in last summer, and I mentioned the show, and we talked about it. I said, would you maybe come in and do the lights? And he said, sure, he would. So he's been in for a week, and we've been enjoying our time together and working doing the lights, and I'm thrilled that he was so willing to give back to the community, and it's an honor to have him here. He's fantastic, in addition to being just a real funny guy, and we have a great time together.
And it sounds like this is a play that could use atmospherics in lighting, yes?
It really does. It's set in a tenement in Dublin in 1920. Dublin at the time had the largest slums in Europe. It was a once grand mansion in Dublin that had been turned into multiple apartments. And these tenements were pretty, you know, nasty places. Could have been 50, 100 people living in 10 rooms, you know, like they were crowded. And so we had to create that atmosphere, and there's two huge windows and required in the set. This is one of the things O'Casey calls for on the set. So there's a lot of light, and it's kind of like the outside world is coming into the apartment. That's one of the themes that we're trying to address. One of the characters, Joe's character, Donald Davern, is a writer who's trying to avoid all the outside world, all the conflict that's going on in all around him in Dublin, yet it keeps on following him.
And follow up more, Joe, about creating this writer who is doing just that, who can't get away.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I don't personally connect to Donald at all. He is, I feel in many ways, very opposite to myself when I think about, okay, what would I do in a time of war, in a time of conflict? He wants to remain passive. He doesn't want to be involved with the politics of the time at all. And unfortunately for Donald, as is the case in war, if you don't choose a side, war will choose a side for you. And he doesn't learn that lesson until it is far too late. You know, just because you don't want to be involved, people around you might get hurt. They might die. And so he has to, unfortunately, learn that lesson the hard way, that passivity in time of conflict, in time of strife, is also a choice.
What about the women Sean O'Casey creates? Are they full-fledged?
It's pretty astounding. His characters, and in this play especially, the women, the Irish women are strong, and the women in this play are strong. Minnie Powell, who starts the relationship with Joe, but then makes a choice on the conflict, and it's a tragic choice that she ends up making, but she is brave and makes a choice of courage that Donald Davern couldn't make. The other women in the play, Mrs. Grigson, whose husband is you could say a nasty drunk at times, you know, but she has to be strong, remain strong for her husband and for the other people around her. And Mrs. Henderson kind of rules the neighborhood, and Mara Molloy plays her, and she's fantastic. She's the one who has her finger on the pulse of everything that's going on.
And you said Dawn McGirl is at home sewing costumes. Tell us what they're like.
Well, I told her, honey, it's not a play about costumes, but she knows that. She's an incredible costume designer and has been for years. And so I didn't really have to worry too much about costumes because I knew Dawn was going to do them. And we talked for about 5 minutes, and she said, well, we have this. And oh, yeah, that's exactly what we needed. So it's appropriate to the time, 1920 in Ireland, so these people weren't wealthy, but they're not in rags. She has managed to gather up appropriate costumes for the time, and they look terrific.
What about dialect, then? Is everyone speaking with accents?
They are. Everyone is speaking with an accent, although I wanted everyone to understand everything that was said on stage. So I had to pull back, you know, like, I want you to give a flavor of Ireland, but I want our audience, especially old deaf people like myself, you know, who are sitting there, to be able to hear and understand everything that's said on stage. And they're, again, like I said, an outstanding cast who they have the accents and the volume, and it's been great.
Joe, is there a speech or a set of lines that you could give us?
Sure, I could. Yeah, I could.
Davern's character, Donald Davern, I was talking before about one of the lulls in the play. The opening of the second act, Seamus Shields, who rents the apartment and then has a friend, Donald, and invited him to stay there, just another lodger to help him pay the rent. So it's nighttime, and they're just talking, and Davern is going on and on about, he's a writer, and he's talking about that you should give up poetry. Shields says the poet's claim to greatness depends on his power to put passion in the common people, and then Davern has what is a harsh commentary about the common people, but, you know, it may be true, and I think it's O'Casey's feeling about the common people. It may be speaking for the author at that point. So he says, you know, poet's claim to greatness depends on his power to put passion in the common people.
Aye, passion to howl for his destruction. The people. Damn the people. The people live in the abyss. The poet lives on the mountaintop. To the people, the end of life is the life that is created for them. To the poet, the end of life is the life he creates for himself. You know, life has a stifling grip upon the throat of the people. It is the poet's musician. You know, the people view creeds and customs and life and necessities through life, but the poet views those creeds.
And Seamus shuts him up at that point and says, I'm here, he hears this sound. But that's, you know, I think that speech is kind of O'Casey's feeling on the position of a writer. And, you know, it's not an easy task to do that, to make those things. And I think that's where he gives voice to that as well. And at the same time, Shields is talking about the fact that you know, it's the civilians that suffer when there's political violence out there. It's the civilians that suffer when there's an ambush. They don't know where to run, shot in the back to save the British Empire or shot in the breast to save the soil of Ireland. So, you know, with all due respect to the gunman, he says, I don't want them to die for me, and I don't want to die for them.
If there's more you'd like to add, otherwise you can tell us where, when, and how.
The show is Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Friday the 28th of February at 7 p.m., Saturday, March 1st at 7 p.m., and Sunday, March 2nd at 2 p.m. And that's it. Three chances to see the show. We have about 100 seats, 100 or so seats, and tickets are selling pretty well, although I'm hoping for sold-out houses. But I think it's something that if you miss it, you're going to regret it. I think if you're Irish, or even if you're not Irish, the play speaks to anybody. But to the Irish at this time of year, it can be a very rewarding experience.
Brian McGurl, theater educator and venue liaison with the Shakespeare Festival, the Scranton Shakespeare Festival, where he will direct The Shadow of a Gunman by Sean O'Casey that opens this weekend. And Joel McGurl, actor and director, who has the role of Donald in the production, speaking with us in anticipation of the opening tomorrow evening. And the play will be featured at the Shakespace at the Marketplace at Steamtown in downtown Scranton. Again, as we just heard, February 28th and March 1st, Friday and Saturday at 7, and then March 2nd at 2, a Sunday matinee. Set against the backdrop of war-torn Dublin during the Irish War of Independence, The Shadow of a Gunman by Sean O'Casey weaves a powerful tale of mistaken identity, political unrest, and the harsh realities of life in a conflicted city. A play that resonates now as much as it did nearly a century ago. O'Casey masterfully explores themes of heroism, fear, and the fine line between courage and cowardice. That's Friday, February 28th, and Saturday, March 1st at 7, and Sunday, March 2nd at 2, at the Shakespace at the Marketplace at Steamtown in downtown Scranton. For more information, on the web, scrantonshakes.com, scrantonshakes.com.